This is the National Conversation with All Things Considered. I'm Ari Shapiro, and each night we're here to answer your questions.
My name's Steve. I'm an RN.
My name is Carla Stern.
My name is Judith Stein-Farrell. I live in Altamont Springs, Florida.
And I'm very concerned about who knew what when.
I miss my friends.
I cannot imagine returning to a normal of crowded airports, packed airplanes.
How is the coronavirus going to affect travel for summertime?
What can we do to avoid that resurgence in the fall?
I'm wondering if you had any advice that you could offer people in my situation.
Tonight, we have NPR journalists and outside experts on hand to offer solid facts, tell you what we know, and correct some of the misinformation that's floating around. And when we don't know something, we'll tell you that too. Send us your questions about the pandemic and the way we live now at npr.org/nationalconversation. On Twitter, use the hashtag NPRConversation. Each night, we begin by answering the question, what happened today?
The Department of Agriculture will be implementing a $19 billion relief program for our great farmers and ranchers as they cope with the fallout of the global pandemic.
$16 billion of that money will go to farmers and ranchers directly. The remaining $3 billion will go towards buying fresh dairy, meat, and produce for food banks. Dr. Francis Collins, director of the National Institutes of Health, told NPR about a large public-private partnership launched today to speed up production of a coronavirus vaccine.
We just need to succeed. I've never seen anything quite like it, and this is exactly the right attitude we need if we're going to win against this pandemic.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo said federal intervention is needed to help ramp up testing, especially getting testing supplies from China.
I'm willing to do what I can do and more. But I'm telling you, I don't do China relations, I don't do international supply chain, and that's where the federal government can help.
And in China, authorities increased the death toll from the coronavirus by 50%. They said many people who died at home in the early days of the outbreak were not included in the original count. Well, joining us now to answer your questions is NPR Global Health and Development Correspondent Jason Beaubien. Good to have you back, Jason.
Hi, Ari.
Our first question is actually a two-parter from Carrie in Anchorage, Alaska. This is the first part.
My concern about the COVID-19 pandemic is the next one. And I'm very concerned about who knew what when. And I had read in the Los Angeles Times that an initiative called PREDICT was defunded by the Trump administration in September of 2019. And PREDICT was working with the Wuhan area and 60 other labs globally to be tracking these viruses. And I want to know what has happened or happening with PREDICT.
Jason, what can you tell us about that? Has this effort been defunded?
Yeah, so PREDICT was a USAID program, and it was supposed to look at emergence of new viruses globally. And it had been funded for two cycles, and its funding cycle ran out in the fall. Yes. So it is no longer, it didn't get renewed. So it wasn't like they pulled it out from underneath it, but its funding cycle came to an end and the decision was made not to continue this. This was probably one of the most ambitious efforts around the world to look for the next Ebola, the next SARS, and yes, to look for the next coronavirus, like the one that, you know, has come out and, you know, now claimed, what are we pushing, 150,000 lives. You know, would PREDICT have found this one? Who knows? But researchers of zoonotic diseases, these diseases that jump from animals over to humans, there's very much a recognition that this is a major threat to human health, global health. Globalization is making it even more of a threat. You know, and PREDICT was a program to set up to do this global surveillance program to try to get on top of that.
Interesting. All right. Well, here is part two of Carrie's question.
The Trump administration this week announced that it was going to defund WHO. So what does that mean for tracking these viruses globally and what kind of information we're going to receive from WHO about other pandemics?
WHO there meaning the WHO, the World Health Organization. So right. As she says, the U.S. has held funding up at least until this review is completed. What have we heard from them, and what does this mean for tracking viruses and responding to outbreaks?
So, you know, we should be clear that the main focus of the WHO is on human diseases and the existing human diseases. You know, they work on how many cases there are of measles globally and how many cases of tuberculosis. And they do a lot of work on primary health care and malaria, particularly in developing countries and trying to strengthen their health systems. They've got a lot on their plate. And while they do some work on emerging infectious diseases, they are not the people out there monitoring it. That's not really their job.
Okay. You know,
their primary focus is on human diseases and trying to ease that burden around the world.
But still, they are on the front lines of fighting the coronavirus outbreak at the moment, right? And the U.S. pulling this funding is inevitably going to have some consequences.
Absolutely. And it's very much a concern for them, particularly if this stretches on for more and more time. But the countries that are probably most going to be hit by that are low-income countries that are going to need the WHO to come in and help them with ventilators, with oxygen, with PPE, with masks, which is something that the WHO is doing at the moment, trying to prepare countries in Africa and in South America that don't have a lot of these supplies already.
They had a press conference today. Did we learn anything new about the challenges that they're facing right now?
Well, so there are two big things, not counting the U.S. funding cut. One is that countries are in sort of these different phases around the world. So on the one hand, they're trying to help countries work on how do you come out of lockdown safely. And there are a lot of countries that are in that mode. The other great concern is the Global South, and that the Global South is about to get slammed by this. So the WHO is attempting to provide global guidance on this pandemic, but you're getting these very different phases of the pandemic playing out in different parts of the world. So, you know, what's happening right now in Nairobi is going to be very different than what's happening in Delhi or Sao Paulo or New York.
Interesting. All right. Our next question comes from another listener in Alaska. This is Patrick in Eagle River.
I'm wondering if the military could be used for contact tracing or anything else, given that we have a large standing army. Maybe we use them for something to help us with this crisis.
Okay, so going from the global outlook to the domestic outlook there, contact tracing, meaning see who people who've tested positive for COVID-19 have come in contact with. Is there a useful function for the military to serve there?
Well, I've been working on several stories about contact tracing around the world, and one thing that I keep hearing from people is that the most effective contact tracers are people from the community that they're monitoring, people from the same village, the same neighborhood. You know, you could send out the military to do this, but winning people's trust could be difficult if you get soldiers knocking on people's doors and asking about your temperature. You know, it just might be a bit intimidating. But that said, you know, there are a lot of different models out there. Singapore, for instance, uses their police force. Nigeria is taking polio vaccinators who used to go door to door and having them do this kind of work. You know, it is recognized that there is going to need to be some huge workforce, hundreds of thousands of people, the CDC says, to effectively trace the number of cases that we have in this country and that we're expecting to have as we go down the other side of that curve. So, you know, potentially the military could play some role in that, but I am hearing from a lot of people that trying to get contact tracers who know the community, speak the language, if you're talking about immigrant communities, is really important because you need to monitor them closely and you need to get their trust so that they will tell you who they were in contact with.
Right. If you have a question for NPR's Jason Beaubien about the virus and its global impact, send it to us at npr.org/nationalconversation or share it on Twitter using the hashtag NPR Conversation. And our next question comes from Barb in Rush City, Minnesota.
My question is about the fall. I watched a special about the 1918 pandemic, and things lightened up and got a little better through the summer and early fall, but then the virus came back, and that October was actually the deadliest month. So my question is, what can we do to avoid that resurgence in the fall? I work for school districts, and everybody's excited about getting started in the fall, but I'm a little worried about if the school year will be interrupted again. So thanks very much.
Jason, I think a lot of people have a similar concern that this might come roaring back, even if it does subside over the summer, which is an if. What do we know about the possibility of resurgence?
Yes. I mean, this is a big concern about this possibly coming in waves. You know, other viruses, you know, most famously, the seasonal flu comes and goes with the seasons. And the big question is, will this one do the same thing? And it's certainly a candidate for doing that. Mind you, both SARS and MERS, the other two coronaviruses that seem to be closest to this one, SARS got extinguished. So you're not getting it with them. That. And then MERS, it still does flare up, but there doesn't seem to be any seasonal rhyme or reason to it. So, when you look at the virus, it looks like this is the virus type of virus that could do this, but we really are going to have to see, you know, what can be done about it. You know, until we have a vaccine, we probably are going to still have some level of social distancing, people not shaking hands, people wearing masks. Again, the wash your hands motto has sort of fallen off a little bit, but that might get ramped up even more if kids are going into school, washing their hands all the time. Basically, we're going to have to be hyper vigilant.
And just briefly, less than a minute left, we've got a question from Caitlin in Berlin who wants to know what will be done to make sure that a vaccine, when it's available, is offered to everyone who needs it. Couple sentences.
There's a lot of concern at the WHO about that potentially this could cause some global tension if one country develops it, hoards it. Yes, that's very much a concern that there's going to be equitable distribution of a vaccine once one is developed.
NPR Global Health Correspondent Jason Beaubien, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Up next, we will answer all your questions about travel. Stay with us.